CJAM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Richard Cairn will be telling us a little bit about his work teaching disability history. So what can you tell me about your work teaching disability history?
Hi, I work for a school district that supports students who receive special education services in Massachusetts. And I, in that organization, we have some teachers who are teaching students, but I also work with teachers in our professional development program. And I've been teaching courses and workshops on teaching history, particularly using primary sources and having students engage in inquiry, pursuing their questions that are of interest to them. I've been doing that since 2006 in a program that we call Emerging America, and have increasingly over the years focused more and more on making sure that disability history narratives are part of what we're teaching. I mean, fully teaching history means teaching disability history along with everything else. And so my work has been to do that has mainly been funded by the Library of Congress, and they funded creation starting 3 years ago. I and a group of collaborators put together a K-12 disability history curriculum that talks about U.S. history and really carries it from the founding of the country up to today.
So why do you think it's important to include a disabilities narrative to get the complete picture?
Partly, there's things like one of the examples that I use with history teachers a lot. They get this really quickly. We look at a photo of Ellis Island and people being screened at Ellis Island as to whether they're going to be admitted to the country or not. And a lot of teachers use a photograph from Ellis Island, and students typically talk about how anxious people might be about whether they're going to be admitted. And so we're already teaching disability history there, because why were they excluding people? They were excluding them if they had a disability. So if you don't talk about that, if you just show the image and talk about the potential immigrants were nervous, but you don't talk about the fact that it was specifically focused on disability, you're not telling the whole story. And any students who are in the class today and they hear this conversation going on, I mean, I've had people say to me, students say to me, oh, they would have kept me out. that's me that they're excluding. And if you don't talk about that, then you're really not serving as a teacher. You're not serving those students well. You're giving them the implicit message that that was fine, and not giving them a chance to talk about how they feel about it.
So
that's a big part of it, but it's also important for students, all students, to learn about, particularly about people with disabilities who have been advocates for people with disabilities across history. Some of the earliest advocates I know about are in the early 1800s, but carrying that right up through the campaign to get the Americans with Disabilities Act passed and so forth. Students need to know about that, especially if they identify as a person who has a disability, so that they understand how they can contribute and how they can be citizens and be involved as citizens and be involved in their communities.
So do you find that the students, and even those undergoing professional development training in this, do you find that they're typically responsive to separating myth from fact in terms of being properly educated concerning disabilities?
That's an interesting question. I think there are some notions that we have to tell teachers explicitly to think about and change how they do things. So something that a lot of teachers will gravitate toward is talking about how people with disabilities overcame those disabilities and how inspiring that is. And so that's partly why we're focused on advocates for people with disabilities who themselves had some kind of disability. But then we explicitly talk about, nobody wants to be somebody else's inspiration. And another thing that we really need to address with teachers is that when you're talking about the history of disability, you're absolutely going to encounter offensive terms, offensive words, and ideas. It's unavoidable, and so not talking about it just covers it up and doesn't address it. The way to overcome stigmas is to bring them into the light of day, is to have an open conversation about them. And so often the teachers haven't thought about that. Many teachers, we've had some survey work done that shows that teachers are uncomfortable talking about disability because they don't want to offend anybody, and helping them get over that is important. So it's not so much that they know myths, I don't think, is that they just haven't thought about it much at all.
When it comes to that, raise an interesting point. They may have encountered students with disabilities they're completely unaware of. Not everyone chooses to disclose or seek the proper help.
Right. Yeah, and it's not the teacher's job to tell students how they want to identify. It's the teacher's job to help students sort through, think through their ideas and feelings, and to be very open and supportive, whatever the students decide, to build a classroom that's supportive, inclusive, and accessible to everybody. And there's students are figuring out who they are. I mean, particularly like middle schoolers, but even in high school, some younger students, they're thinking about how they want to be in the community, and so they've got a lot. I mean, that's true of all students. if they have some kind of disability, they're thinking that through too. And so making sure that they feel embraced by their community, whoever they are, wherever they come from, is the important thing. That's not going to happen unless the teachers think about it and think through things.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. In this segment of our show, Claudine Cousins will be telling us a little bit about Empower Simcoe. So what can you tell me about Empower Simcoe?
Empower Simcoe is a multi-service charitable nonprofit organization. We support people of all abilities. And that means that from individuals with a disability to individuals without a disability, from birth to end of life. So we have individuals who are diagnosed or identified with a disability from infanthood, and we work with the hospitals to provide early intervention and support them with their families through the process and provide programming and supports all the way through childhood, adulthood, and into whatever services they need to provide the best life that we can help support them with, all the way through to adult services, which is a variety of things, such as group living, and where someone lives with someone else in a group home, independent living, where they live on their own in an apartment or a condominium, or they live in a basement with someone else, like, you know, any one of our someone you might know who lives in a basement apartment. And we support them to do things like take their medication, keep their space clear from clutter so that they don't hoard and create a health and safety issue. We also do things such as employment. So we support individuals to prepare themselves to go into the workplace. So we do employment supports and train them to interview, to go into a job space and to put their best foot forward, so to speak. So we go into the workplace and we support them on the job, and then we fade away from the workplace so that they're now in the workplace. We partner with about 400 employers in Simcoe County, so that they can see what great employees, individuals with a disability or without a disability can provide, but specifically individuals with a disability. So we have individuals who are working at Starbucks, at the grocery stores, at banks, restaurants, places like that, at the library, and we help do that. We also help individuals get into the community. One of the things that we are very focused on is making sure people can live a really self-fulfilling life. So the same kind of life you, me, other people want to live, everyone wants to live a self-fulfilling life. So how do we help them do that is to help them get into the community. If someone wants to learn how to take a bus, for example, they want to learn how to travel into the city. We help them to go to concerts, help them go to hockey games, just to live the same life that everyone else wants to lead.
So I'm curious, how do you go about reaching out to the community to let them know that supports you offer do exist and you can help them fulfill the best quality of life possible?
That's a great question. So apart from the non-active way of having a website and having our services up there on the website, we consider ourselves a community agency. So we are in the community. We deliver our services in the community. So at churches, at other community partners, such as rec centers, other service delivery agencies who deliver like mental health services or recreational services. We partner with them in the community. We also partner with educational organizations like a community college or a university that's local. And also, we partner with employers. So we go out into the community. We let them know who we are and what we do. If there are things happening within the community which it always does. So there's always a festival or there's always some kind of community event. We make sure that we are present at those events as well, so that others in the community are aware. Even service clubs like the Legion or Rotary, we make sure they're aware that we are out here and what we provide. So we go into the community and make sure that we are talking to families, talking to self-advocates, talking to other providers, and letting them know what we do.
So in your time with Empower Simcoe, has there been any success moment or story that stands out for you?
There have been a few. One specific one is around our rebranding. Empower Simcoe wasn't always Empower Simcoe. We used to be called Simcoe Community Services. However, what we found from asking our community, asking our people we support, as well as our families, there's a confusion around, you know, who we are and what we do. There was no recognition in the community as to, you know, what does Simcoe Community Services do? A confusion around the actual municipal government and what they did versus what we did. So we decided to rebrand. Rebranding our agency was one success that allowed us to be much more intentional in communicating what we stood for, which was empowering people to live their very best lives. And that has really shown to others what we do and has created a new sense of focus for us. And we have seen the benefit of that. We have seen that others now tell us that they understand what we do. They can see what we do. And they believe that the branding made a big difference with regards to that. Another success I would put out there is we have a self-advocates group, and they rebranded themselves into the Believe in Yourself Committee. And they have taken control of who they are and what they are all about. And they are now putting their voice out and are moving forward in starting to pull together other self-advocates in Simcoe County to be able to bring the message of the individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities to the community and talk about, you know, what that's like, what the lived experience of that's like, and how they can help contribute to the success of the community. And I think that is a great thing.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you.
Of course. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Writing Support Desk is a free service available to all University of Windsor students from all disciplines and levels of study. The Writing Support Desk helps students hone their own writing and editing skills to empower them to submit their best work possible. It also helps students to understand assignment prompts, construct strong arguments, and to properly cite sources. The Writing Support Desk is currently available online through one-on-one consultations and workshops via Microsoft Teams and Blackboard Virtual Lounge. For the most up-to-date information, visit uwindsor.ca/writing support.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard about teaching disability history from Richard Cairn, and Claudine Cousins told us a little bit about Empower Simcoe. In this segment of our show, Sean Wiltshire will be telling us a little bit about the benefits of employment advocacy. So, can you tell me a little bit about some of the roles that an employment advocate might play in supporting someone with a disability in terms of getting a job and retaining one?
I think probably the biggest role that they would play is we often consider folks a translator, so between the skills of the individual with a disability and the employer. And at the end of the day, the employer needs somebody with the skills that they've advertised. So by supporting the individuals who have disabilities, who have those skills, to recognize that the opportunity is there, to ensure the employer that the job will be done, and to give the employer the understanding of what an accommodation may mean, It's often very small. It could include just, you know, sort of changing the work environment a little bit. You know, maybe they work in a two-story building and doesn't have an elevator, so the person has to work on the first floor. So it's just those small adjustments, and being able to explain those to the employer in a way and in terms that he understands. Because at the end of the day, the product is the skills of the individual, and that's what they're often selling. So it's sell for the skill first and anything else secondary.
So that being the case, does having an advocate in terms of the work help debunk some of the myths or misperceptions an employer might have? A lot of them tend to have that perception that an accommodation is going to be prohibitively expensive, or someone with a disability might take legal action if I don't do this, that, or the other.
Yeah, and that misinformation is there, and I think often that it's a way for employers to be able to ask the questions that they're not sure about in an environment that we're going to listen. We're gonna be non-judgmental and understand that this is an opportunity to provide a good skilled individual, and we go at it from that angle of always trying to educate about the inclusion processes that will benefit the business. Because at the end of the day, businesses are in business to employ people, so they have to make money. So we're selling the skills. So it's always that kind of giving the employer the opportunity to ask the questions that they have and answer them clearly. But one of the other things I think has been a great benefit is using your champions. So for many, many years, we've used referrals. So when I ask somebody to talk to us about an employment opportunity, I'll often say to them, somebody else we might have worked with, a company name in the past, I might have somebody at that organization that would be willing to talk to the person and say, hey, you know, this organization really helped us find some great employees. You know, accommodations weren't difficult. They really fit in, and it's been really great for us. So selling it business to business with the support of the organization or advocate is really also a great way to do it, because nothing sells something like somebody who's already succeeded at it.
So I'm guessing that someone with a disability who gets a job and is proving successful would always have the option to turn to you for support. And if a situation comes up that they require a little extra intervention on, I'm guessing you'd still be there. It's not like just
absolutely. And I think this is where some services falter a little bit, because it's not a matter of keeping somebody on your books per se as an organization. It's being ready to manage and support their expectations of what their success is. So I think that it's the opportunity, if they have a bad day and they need somebody to sort of, did I handle this right, some help? Because part of the challenge is that folks often struggle in these environments to ensure that their skills are identified, and that it's not their disability that people are judging if there's an issue. So I think having that level of support is productive for everybody. Because if the job is being done, and, you know, there might be some workplace challenges, well, everybody has workplace challenges. It's how we manage those expectations, and it's how we support the individual when they need something else. I mean, over the years, Cam, I've had folks who only call me once a year when they're up for their performance evaluation and they might have a few questions. That's it. That's all the support that they need. But then I might have somebody else who struggles with some anxiety issues at work, and once a week we'll call into the office and just sort of say, I had a good week, or I was challenged, or I learned something. And it's just those. So it's very individualized, and that's what people need. They don't want to be over-supported, but they also don't want to be under-supported. So it's again, it's all about self-driven understanding of what your term of success is. Maybe your vision of success is working 10 hours a week and having some recreation, or maybe your definition of success is 40 hours a week and moving up the corporate ladder. So the supports for each one of those folks will be different, and that's really what this is about. How is that, again, listening to folks about, stop telling them what they need, start asking them what they want.
So in terms of the advocacy work you've done, is there any success moment or story you'd like to share?
Well, I will refer to one that I've told many times, and it was the very, very first time that I helped somebody find a job. And so this is back in 1993, so it's quite a while ago. It's 31 years ago. And I had a young lady who had recently moved out of an institution, and this is when, for folks who are listening, we have large institutions that still do, that house hundreds of folks with disabilities. And she had moved out, and she was living in a residential environment, and we were able to get her a job at McDonald's. And she came in after 2 weeks, and she was really, really upset. And so I started to talk to her, and I asked her what was going on, and she held up her paycheck. She looked me straight in the eye, and she said, "Sean, I'm valuable." And till this day, Cam, 30-odd years later, I still think of that story. Because often folks are just trying to demonstrate that they have value in our community. So that young woman taught a lesson that we all had to understand, that she, for the very first time, by being paid for the skill she had, she considered herself valuable. But I've never forgotten that moment, and that's the moment I'm trying to recreate every day, is to give people the opportunity to understand their value. And all skills have value. Somebody will pay for the skills that you have. We just have to be better at listening and finding and working with folks so those skills are highlighted and we're not selling a disability. We sell the skill, and that's what we did for that young lady.
Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yep. I was pretty floored by the story Sean shared. Truth of the matter is, we should never have to ask that question, am I valuable? Am I good enough? For the fact is, we all have something to contribute in society. It's just gotten to a point at which people don't often immediately recognize the tools and the gifts that a person may have. All too often, we're tempted to go with that first glance instinct. Sometimes, with a person with a disability, that can lead us to some unfortunate places. A stereotype, for example, of assuming a person with a disability is not capable of a job. It's just selling yourself short as a business leader. Instead of asking, how can we partner these skills with this job? Employers might fall into the trap that says, this is not someone who can handle the workload. How do we know that? Have you seen this person work? Are you aware of their education, their background, their capabilities? Honestly, dig a little deeper, people. Ask the questions. It can't be just a matter of stereotyping. That would be the same thing as saying, two people have disabilities, they must be an ideal match for each other. Also, not a good thing. People may choose to stereotype. However, disability life, like any group in society, is a matter of individuality. It is a matter of how driven the person is, what they've achieved in their life, what skills they would bring to the table, what they would bring to a relationship, a friendship, what they would bring to an educational setting. You have to look at the individual. You have to take people as unique and interesting and diverse. For the truth is, a person with a disability will often find ways of surprising you. Many times, the best way to get someone to do something is to tell them it cannot be done. Sometimes, they'll just pick up the mantle. See it for what it is. See it as a challenge to be met, a source of strength to be learned. But I maintain, that woman Sean helped, she wasn't valuable because somebody gave her a paycheck. She was valuable simply because she was part of the community and had something to say and something to contribute. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.